I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it's primary election day. We'll get to some key races we're watching. But first, police in Spokane arresting a man accused of starting a fire that has destroyed 700 homes. And a progressive state lawmaker rants about cops and slave patrols while eating chicken wings. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. It is primary election day. We'll talk about some races that we're watching and a very eventful race that we're going to bring you some clips from. But of course, the huge news coming out of Washington state and really one of the biggest stories in the country right now is that the fire that has destroyed 700 homes in Spokane was allegedly caused by an arsonist. His name is Aaron Farinacci. He's 37 years old. He's being held on $1 million bond. He was arrested by the Spokane County Sheriff's Office, and he has a criminal history. He also has a history of allegedly engaging in arson behavior. So before I get to that criminal history, let me walk you through the press conference held by the Spokane County Sheriff yesterday and how they came to arrest this man. So as the Old Trails fire was starting, so this is the fire in Spokane proper that is responsible for destroying the most amount of homes. So as that fire was starting and people were trying to evacuate the area, a couple witnesses noticed a man on the side of the road acting suspiciously.
Thankfully, we had some very aware and alert citizens. They were driving into the area where the fire started. The witness, a citizen, very good citizen, noticed a male standing on the side of the road looking into the trees as he was going to pick somebody up. About 10 minutes later, as he was coming back through the area, he noticed the male was bending down near some grass. At that point, the male stood up and looked very nervous, according to our citizen witness. At that point, the male walked away. The citizen returned to their house. A short time later, after being at home, they saw smoke coming from what they believed was the area that they had seen the male bending down by the side of the road.
Yeah, so all of that was obviously pretty suspicious. Deputies ended up contacting a person matching the description who ended up being this Aaron Farinacci. He had a fanny pack with cigarettes, a butane lighter, and a box of heavy-duty waterproof matches. However, despite all of that, the sheriff says the deputies in that moment ended up IDing him and letting him go.
Mr. Farinacci was contacted in the area about a mile and a half from where the fire started and was detained, questioned, and ultimately released after being identified by our citizen witness. Mind you that a lot of the details that have come to light during the investigation were not known to the deputies who detained Mr. Farinacci that day. But because of body-worn camera evidence and reports, when major crimes detectives started investigating that early yesterday, they were able to identify him, and working with investigators from the Department of Natural Resources and major crimes detectives in Spokane County, they were able to identify him, develop probable cause, and determine that the origin of the fire was indeed exactly where the witnesses had seen Mr. Farinacci kneeling in the grass earlier.
Yeah, so essentially, it looked really suspicious. You know, deputies, based on witness reports, they're still trying to actively get people out of this area, obviously the contents of the fanny pack, but they had to build a case, make sure, yes, that's where the fire started. And then you heard the sheriff there referencing, you know, some of the details that have since came to light were not known by the deputies who contacted him that day. So what are some of the details? Well, one of the details are in at least two incidents in 2025, he was contacted as a suspect in potential arsons.
As far as we can determine right now, he is a Spokane resident. And I will say, as part of our investigation, Mr. Farinacci has been contacted into regarding arson-related behavior, although no previous arrests or convictions.
Yeah, that was in August and July of 2025. So incidents just one month apart. One of them, he was contacted like at a park. So he has a history of doing things like this. But his history goes even deeper. He's a convicted felon who was just released from prison in 2020 in another state, got off parole in 2024, because 14 years ago, in 2012, he murdered his father. Here's the sheriff.
Mr. Farnacci is a convicted felon out of the state of Arizona. He has a felony conviction for manslaughter and a preceding arrest in the same case in premeditated murder in the state of Arizona.
So a killer started the fire in Spokane that very well could have killed people and has burned 700 homes. Here's the story from ABC 10 in Arizona where his crime occurred. Arizona man who killed his own father, now accused of starting a wildfire in Washington state. So he was convicted in Arizona for manslaughter, aggravated assault, killed his father in 2010, was convicted in 2012, following an argument between the two over cleaning dishes. He was released from prison in 2020. He served a 12-year sentence. He was discharged from probation in December 2024. So what? He comes straight to Washington state, where, you know, anyone can just do anything they want, apparently, after murdering his father, getting essentially a slap on the wrist for that. Governor Bob Ferguson said he's aware of the criminal history, said the individual, we understand, has a criminal history. It just takes a tragic situation and makes it more heartbreaking to think that much of this damage could have been caused by an individual doing this on purpose. It adds to a really challenging situation. And the damage is heartbreaking. Been seeing the aerial images, you know, before and after of certain neighborhoods that have been completely wiped out. We've heard stories of individuals who lost everything they own. State Rep Jenny Graham is one of them. The only thing basically left standing at her residence is a charred American flag still on the pole. I mean, it's an absolutely unreal situation. Now, there continue to be some other rumors about this individual's background. For instance, his whether he's homeless, and I know that has been brought up. In a situation like this, where we have an active ongoing situation with the fires, early stages of the investigation, I don't want to get into rumors and innuendo. I mean, we yesterday, before we came on the air, knew that there was some pretty strong rumors and evidence pointing to the fire being arson. We didn't say it, as you recall, at the time. And so what we do know, though, is that he is a convicted killer, got out of prison, came to Washington state, and spent the next 2 years. I mean, remember, 2024 is when he was released off probation. 2025, August, July, that's when he's allegedly, at least questioned in relation to arsons. So this is a behavior he has obviously taken to, and then these eagle-eyed citizens and witnesses spot him bending down in the grass, and he's caught with essentially an arson tool kit. So this is a horrifying, horrifying situation. You know, most wildfires are man-made, but typically it's an accident or it's someone acting irresponsibly. And now to have two of the largest, most destructive fires in terms of the number of homes built in American history be, you know, Palisades Fire that was started by an arsonist and now in Spokane started by an arsonist. It's absolutely outrageous, and someone who, again, was no stranger to the criminal justice system. Now, one side note to all of this that I do want to mention, because we're getting a lot of questions about it. As I said, today is the primary election day. So if you are someone whose home burned in Spokane, or if you're one of the 65,000 people who have been evacuated from your home, maybe you had to leave your ballot behind, hadn't turned it in yet, maybe your ballot was reduced to ash and dust. So there is an option if, and I understand there's probably a million things on your mind, but if you still want to make sure that you vote today, there is an option. This is from Secretary of State Steve Hobbs. My heart is with everyone across Washington affected by these devastating wildfires. While voting may not be the first thing on people's minds as they respond to these wildfires, I want to ensure everyone has the opportunity to vote if they're able. If you live in an area that is impacted, remember you can return your ballot to any county drop box or elections office, and you can print a replacement ballot online at votewad.gov or just visit any county elections office or voting center to request one. So even if, let's say, you've evacuated out of the county, you can still drop the ballot that was assigned to you by Spokane County in another county's ballot drop box, it will get to where it's going. But more likely, because I'm sure that people evacuating didn't grab their ballots and take them with them, more likely is that you'll need to print a replacement ballot. You can go votewa.gov. You have to plug in your first and last name and your date of birth to be able to bring up your voter account. And then from there, you can print a ballot. I've had to do that before. I don't remember if I just lost it or something. It's been several years, but I've had to do that process. It's actually pretty simple. And so do that if you have not voted yet in the primary election. And again, we'll get to more on the primary stuff coming up later in comments. All right. Quick update to a story that we brought you yesterday about finally maybe a little bit of justice for Callie Keeler down in Puyallup, the teen wrestler who says she was sexually assaulted by a trans opponent. As we discussed on the show yesterday, two school officials, a principal and an athletic director in the Puyallup School District, have been charged with failure to report because they sat on these allegations from Callie Keeler for 2 long months and only did something about it after they got word that we were about to do a news story about it. So we've been reaching out to the appropriate people for comment on all of this. And here's what we've learned. We've learned that both of these school officials are now on paid administrative leave. That's according to the Puyallup School District's communications department. They said the district is aware of the pending charges involving Rogers High School principal Jason Smith and athletics coordinator Peter Collins. Consistent with standard district protocol, while we cooperate with the pending legal process, both employees have been placed on non-disciplinary paid administrative leave. So, and look, I guess innocent until proven guilty. I think if these were like charges of a violent nature or something, they probably wouldn't be on paid leave. So I can't say that that's particularly surprising. But also, unless the world has lost its mind, which sometimes I think it has, they're going to be convicted or they're going to have to plead guilty. Because it's all in black and white, in their own writing, the emails, the timeline. They sat on it for 2 months. And then the principal, frankly, lied about his knowledge of the alleged assault. So that's a whole nother thing that they haven't charged him with. So, their goose is cooked when it comes to these charges. Now, one of the other things that we wanted to try to understand here is, like, me, Nicole, you, regular citizens understand that there's a duty to report. That certain people in certain professions are required by law to report allegations like this. You know, for instance, domestic violence, like law enforcement, that's a well-known thing. Even if they're out day-to-day doing their private lives, if they know of domestic violence or abuse of a child or something, they have to report it, even if it involves members of their own family. That's just kind of a known thing. And the same with teachers. It's like, if I know that teachers have a duty to report allegations of sexual assault, shouldn't the teachers know? Shouldn't the principal know? Shouldn't the athletic director know? But this keeps happening. I mean, you've got the Longview School Superintendent who was arrested for failure to report and some other associated crimes involving allegations of sexual assault on student to student. And then that happens. Then you have this in the middle of all of it. It's like, this should be a very obvious thing that they know they have a duty to report. So we reached out to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. We just asked them a few questions. You know, is this sort of stuff covered in teacher training? I would hope so. Do you believe there should be more training in light of these headlines? And what's your response to the charges? Here is the totality of the statement that we got from OSPI. The state requirement is to provide training at the time of hire and every 3 years thereafter. It is recommended that the training be provided annually. A commonly used training is the Washington-specific Child Abuse Mandatory Reporting Online Course. It's offered by an organization called, or a company called Vector Solutions. It says Vector Solutions offers additional courses that address mandatory reporting requirements, professional boundaries, and other educator duties, blah, blah, blah. It is also recommended that districts require all staff to review the adopted board policy procedure regarding child abuse prevention and reporting. As far as requirements for teacher preparation programs, that question would be best addressed by the Professional Educator Standards Board. Okay, I mean, that's one way to kick the can down to someone else. And so I guess we'll reach out to the Professional Educator Standards Board. But as they state there, there is a state requirement to provide training at the time of hire and every 3 years thereafter. That's the requirement by the state on mandatory reporting. So we know that these individuals got that, if they did what was required by law, got that training when they were hired and should have gotten it every 3 years thereafter, And the recommendation is that you do it every year, but at least by state law, you have to do it every three years. Is that happening? Is it happening in school districts across the state? Is anyone checking to make sure that it's happening? Or is it happening and these people just don't care because they are the law in their own mind? They're judge, jury, and executioner, and they want to protect kids, and in this case, a trans kid, from maybe being in trouble with the police. And I think that that's what motivated the Longview school superintendent, is she thought, oh, I'll handle this internally so it doesn't ruin these kids' lives. But it's not up to them to decide whether claims are credible. They just have to report it to law enforcement. It really isn't that difficult of a concept to grasp. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, a bizarre candidate form and a progressive lawmaker melting down over having to vote for more funding for the police. First, if you are trying to save, and actually, you know, I would think that this is kind of top of mind for people. I know that Mike and I were thinking about it yesterday, all these homes burned to the ground in Spokane. I mean, we've got so many natural disaster risks here. The flooding that happened earlier this year that was just horrible. Earthquake, obviously, earthquake prone areas in our state is a big thing. So, you know, given all this, maybe worth just checking to make sure that your home is properly insured against these dangers if you're in an area that could be wildfire prone or flooding like we had earlier this year or earthquake damage. You know, is your insurance provider, do you have the proper insurance to cover your home in the event that something like this happens? And while you're double checking it, reach out to our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, and just talk to them about that. You know, part of taking the First Mark challenge is just going over what's happening in your life, what your concerns are. And so now is a good time. If you're concerned about wildfires, even if you're on the cusp of an area that, you know, hasn't really experienced them, but now you're seeing what happened in Spokane and you're just thinking, gosh, I need to be protected. First Mark Insurance can walk you through all of that. And we hear so many wonderful things from Undivided viewers and listeners who are also, in addition to getting the insurance they need, saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. Boop. Okay. Last Thursday in Spokane, there was a candidate survivor form, which actually sounds kind of cool. I'm not going to lie. I like the idea of this in theory. So here is the graphic for it. Candidate survivor, Spokane's spiciest candidate form. Put on by Range Media, the local PBS station, and some other entities. And this is sort of a playoff of that popular podcast. What is that called? Hot Ones or something? Where the guy sits down with celebrities and they like eat progressively spicier wings and then ask them questions about whatever it is. So that's a pretty popular podcast. Okay, so this was specifically candidate form in Spokane with Spokane sort of candidates. And also, given the fact that the wildfires are happening, I think that that makes this even more ridiculous that these are the sort of things happening and being discussed by elected leaders, you know, at the front end of a major fire there. But I digress. So here's a little image of the debate stage for Spokane's spiciest. And they had a number of different races that they featured in this. But this particular race was for the 3rd legislative district for State House. So that covers Spokane. And the two individuals you see there on stage is Tony Kaipe. He's the Republican candidate challenging incumbent state representative Natasha Hill, the Democrat. And Natasha Hill might look familiar to you. I know we've played clips of her on the show, but she is the incumbent representing the 3rd legislative district in Spokane. So it was her, this Republican challenger, Tony Kaipe, up on stage there. So the MC, Aaron Sellers, who works with Range Media, we'll talk more about Aaron in a moment, asked State Representative Natasha Hill about her seemingly flip-flopping stances on law enforcement, police, and police funding. And what followed is one of the more deranged rants I've ever heard from a state lawmaker.
During your first term in the legislature, you passed a budget that included a $100 million increase for police recruitment, the largest police staffing increase in legislative history. How do you square that with your 2020 statement that, quote, police were created to return people escaping from slavery back to slave masters, are complicit in the worst gang this country has ever seen, and need to be defunded?
You can't. It's a contradiction. When you enter this house in your caucus on the Democratic side, you sign up for a team. What we did on that $100 million that Bob Ferguson shoved down our throats in order to play nice with the opposition, which is why I say take such a big issue with playing nice with the opposition. I'm not trying to move toward fascism. If they want to hold shit down with fascism and salute Nazis, that's not, there's no center anymore. I need more progressives in the House so we don't have to take votes that we don't want to take. So I can be honest, not a vote I wanted to take, took it for the team. But we put guardrails around it. So what can you use it for? You have to do all this public health and safety stuff. You have to raise taxes in your community. You're not just getting free money from the government. We're going to monitor and regulate it. Law enforcement. Why? Because we know your history is slave patrols. And that's why they're using ICE right now to round up immigrants to deport them so they can bring in a new batch and do more slavery. How are they doing that? H-2A-1 visas, where they're going to provide federal subsidized housing. They're going to displace the folks who are already in our already working on our farms. They're going to move out families like Tony's that have been here, and that's not okay. And so I'm going to stand up for that. And I'm going to make sure whatever money goes to law enforcement and I community, that I stand right there to hold them accountable, and I'm going to ask all of you to stand with me.
10 seconds.
All right.
So we need to elect the most progressive candidates. Elect Luke.
Time.
Elect me. Elect Aaron.
Time.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh my gosh. These are the people who are making laws that impact your life. These are the people who are in Olympia taking the votes to raise your taxes, to defund the police, or in this case, fund the police, but it was shoved down their throats. What did she say about Bob Ferguson, little shot across the bow?
What we did on that $100 million that Bob Ferguson shoved down our throats in order to play nice with the opposition, which is why I say take such a big issue with playing nice with the opposition. I'm not trying to move toward fascism. If they want to hold shit down with fascism and salute Nazis, that's not, there's no center anymore.
Saluting Nazis by trying to make sure Washington State isn't still the lowest number of police officers per capita state in the nation? What does that have to do with saluting Nazis and fascism? And I mean, Bob Ferguson, first of all, the funding that they passed is nonsense. And it's led to, I think the number I saw was maybe 30 to 40 new officers. And that doesn't get us anywhere close to where we need to be. So the whole thing was a sham just so Bob Ferguson could act like he likes the cops after a career as the attorney general trying to put police officers in prison for murder. And so she's saying, oh, he shoved it down our throats to play nice with the fascists. I mean, absolutely outrageous. But you see, she admitted something there that I said at the time. I said, they watered this down so the money doesn't even have to be used for cops. It can be used for it could be used for unarmed therapists or whatever to come and de-escalate situations. She admits this.
I can be honest, not a vote I wanted to take, took it for the team. But we put guardrails around it. So what can you use it for? You have to do all this public health and safety stuff. You have to raise taxes in your community. You're not just getting free money from the government. We're going to monitor and regulate it. Law enforcement. Why? Because we know your history is slave patrols. And that's why they're using ICE right now to round up immigrants to deport them so they can bring in a new batch and do more slavery.
Oh my gosh. First of all, she says, oh, we're not giving you just free money from the government. We're going to monitor and regulate it. Fine, monitor and regulate it. I love that. Can you do that with all the other money? Because now you're all about monitoring and regulating our tax dollars while you guys watch hundreds of millions of dollars unaccounted for in childcare fraud and all of these things. But this is the one area, all money for cops, that we're going to monitor and regulate it because we all of a sudden care about fiscal responsibility and government accountability. That's very strange. Now, that is unhinged. And I think it also should be a warning to Bob Ferguson. No matter how loony lefty you pretend to be and push these things like our new income tax, they still don't like you. They're never going to like you, and they're going to primary you. It might not happen in 2028. It might, I don't know, but you can guarantee it that they're going to fight against you with every fiber of their being because they think funding the police is fascism and right wing, and people who want to fund the police are the enemy. Now, one other thing I want to mention. Can we just talk about this MC quick? Here's a picture. Aaron Sellers. Listen, now don't judge a book by its cover, Brandy. Don't judge a book by its cover. Well, look, the Republican guy shows up, right, for this debate. If you were the Republican candidate and you show up and that's your moderator, are you automatically going to assume that you're getting a fair shake? And mind you, this is put on by the PBS station. The PBS station, okay? The PBS station interviewed this woman once, Erin Sellers, who works for that Range Media, which is like an alternative media in Spokane. Here she is on the local PBS station talking about what she sees her role as a journalist as.
I think of my role as somebody whose job it is to make those confusing and huge structures of power feel as accessible to you as possible so you can understand what your government is trying to do and advocate for yourself so that one day, hopefully soon, we live in a world that does have liberty. We're not constantly having to strive for it or fight for it.
The freest place on the planet doesn't have liberty, and she wants these huge power structures to be... What does that even mean? And this is the person that gets to moderate debates that are aired on PBS. Tell us a little more about... Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say she? She, they. I apologize. She, they. Erin Sellers, she, they. Reporter Spokane. Again, with Range Media, it says, Range is a media organization for people who love the Inland Northwest and want to make it better. We believe our communities are stronger when our newsrooms are run by truth's fiercest advocates, the journalists themselves. Since 2020, Range has built a newsroom that employs working people. Well, yeah, or empowers, I said employs working people. Yeah, that's sort of a con. Empowers working people with civic education and people-centered investigative reporting. We are emphatically anti-racist, class-focused, and passionate about bridging divides. Are you, though? I'm not so sure about that. They're a worker-owned cooperative dedicated to democratic management. Look, you think that PBS for one second, whether it's the Spokane PBS or Seattle PBS, would air a debate that I moderated? Not a chance in hell. And I was like a very good debate moderator when I was at Fox 13. I think, I like to think, but I give my opinion now, you know, so I understand. I don't think the Democrats would show up to a debate that I moderated, but this Republican showed up and that's what he got. She, they, asking questions about cops and slave patrols. Absolutely unhinged stuff, you guys. And we wonder why our state is just... circling down the drain. All right, coming up next, speaking of circling down the drain, the lawsuit challenging Washington State's new rent control policy is entering a new phase. We'll get an update on that. First, if you're thinking about leaving the state of Washington or just moving, I guess, downsizing, I think there's a lot of people who are moving to Idaho, Texas, Florida, etc. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, and I would encourage you to do that early, even if you're at the early stages of just thinking about it, because right now the market's interesting. As we've been discussing, there's a lot of listings on the market, so it might take a little longer to sell your home, and you might have to put a little more effort into it up front to get the kind of money for your home that you want to get for your home and that you could get fairly easily a couple years ago. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are just about the best in the world. Yeah, I said it. I can say whatever I want, really. At marketing. I mean, when it comes to their listings, if you compare them to other listings on the market, there's a reason why Wes Jones and his team do well for clients. And this comes down to big things and little things, you know, things like staging and cosmetic upgrades to make sure your home really shines when people walk in the door, but also photographs, video, immersive tours, and things like that that can make your home stand out, get more feet in the door, more offers on the table. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so we know that there is rent control right now in the state of Washington. It was passed via House Bill 1217, and this capped rent increases for landlords. But one thing I didn't realize, I guess, when we were covering this at the time is that the cap for landlords to raise rent at any given time, I think, is around 10%. But they actually set a lower cap for like mobile homes. So if you're, you know, run a mobile home park, and you rent out mobile homes at the park or something, you actually have even stricter rent control regulations than a regular landlord that's running like an apartment or a condo or something like that. So our sponsors, our show sponsors at the Rental Housing Association, are involved in a lawsuit brought about by, you know, individuals who rent out those kinds of units that seeks to specifically challenge that aspect of the rent control law, that it's different standards based on what kind of landlord for what kind of unit you are. So Kevin Schilling with the RHA was nice enough to join us and explain where that lawsuit stands. Kevin Schilling, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, Brandy.
Hi. Wow, you seem so excited to be here. I love it.
I'm always excited to talk about how we can improve housing in Washington.
Well, why not? That is what you're here for, after all. So I've been waiting for an update on this, actually. I mean, obviously, rent control happened. There is a pending lawsuit. First, what is the specific basis for the lawsuit that we're waiting for a ruling on?
Well, the lawsuit is from the manufactured housing communities against the state because the state's rent control bill has a dual system of rent control. So 10% rent control for regular rental properties, multiplexes, things like that, but 5% if you're a manufactured housing community. And as we know, manufactured housing is a naturally occurring affordable housing option for folks, especially for lower income folks. And Congress has even just said this. Congress has even just passed this new 21st Century Road to Housing Act, which specifically makes manufactured housing cheaper and easier to build. So this is kind of the direction that the housing industry is going, is more of this. But the state of Washington said, nope, we want to hold folks back and only say you can raise your rent 5%, even if you needed something like maintenance fixes, retrofits, anything to do with your property, you can only raise rent 5% a year.
Yeah. So what has been, even though, you know, lawsuit is nothing is promised, right? So has there been an immediate impact on the number of units that people are willing to build over this?
Yeah, there's been an immediate impact in the sense that there have been multiple manufactured housing communities that have just closed doors and have said we're no longer operating in the state of Washington.
Yeah. So, I mean, devil's advocate, you know, I think probably what was going through their minds is we do know that people who occupy those units are older, low income, maybe less likely to be able to absorb a 10% increase. So what is RHA's sort of argument to that? That they are already catering to low income people. And so an increase of more than 10% is going to be really tough on them.
Well, I would say the argument is, number one, you're just showing the need to build more housing. Like, this continues every single argument that is made to say more rent control is literally the argument to say we need more housing. But more than that, it's the argument to say, are you admitting that maybe the social safety net isn't big enough or working effectively enough to provide sort of the stop gaps for the folks who are most in need of assistance here? Like, I did a quick Google search, a 5-minute Google search for resources in Pierce County to figure out if there were opportunities for folks to find financial assistance or rental assistance or any kind of program from the state or the county government. And there's a ton. We have tons of programs to help, especially seniors with property tax exemptions, rental assistance, getting placement into a senior housing program that is fully paid for by the government. Like, these programs exist. The social safety net exists. One of the arguments being made is that there's no safety valve in the state of Washington. So those services I just mentioned for the renters, there's no way for a landowner or a property owner or someone that manages one of these communities to say to the state government, hey, listen, my insurance rates went up 15% this year. My property taxes went up 10% this year. I need to be able to raise a certain amount of money in order to pay for these things. We don't have a safety valve. There's no way for people to go and appeal a cost increase or a cost assistance for the actual property owner themselves. They have this in California. They have this in New York. The places with the most far-reaching rent control policies, they have safety valves for, but not here in Washington.
So where is this lawsuit at right now? What stage is it at?
So we just heard arguments in front of the Spokane County Superior Court. And so the judge is making her determination right now. So she said that we'll hear in the next 2 weeks or so what her ruling is. And hopefully her ruling is that we get to continue forward and continue making these arguments and continue to say that this law is unconstitutional to begin with, that you have a single subject rule in the state of Washington, but this has seven subjects that you are unfairly burdening a specific industry, and that there's no safety valve. So hopefully she sees those arguments and says, yes, we're going to continue letting the manufactured housing communities make this argument against the state.
Yeah, so we'll update you when we have an update on what the judge rules in that case. But, you know, anything that I think goes after the insane idea of rent control is good. This is that avenue via the manufactured homes. I would like to see the whole rent control law obviously tossed out. I think it's going to be disastrous for housing availability in the state of Washington, but TBD on that. But thanks for that update from our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. All right, coming up next, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rules that a teacher can be disciplined for having anti-trans books in his classroom. You don't hear that often. That's why it's hard for me to say, because usually it's the pro-trans books in the classroom. So we'll have an update on that. First, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech. Do you know whether your investor is paying enough attention to what's happening globally, what's happening nationally, and is making sure that they're guarding against risk for your retirement portfolio? I would recommend just getting a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham. Your retirement is something that obviously is so important that we're all working hard toward. We've got our dream retirements. We want to make sure that they're properly protected. So get a second opinion with Bulwark Capital's Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. They are focused always on risk management, looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk Portfolio Review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, across social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. All right, an interesting case out of the Ninth Circuit that I think challenges whether we can all be morally consistent on this issue. So this from the Oregonian. Oregon educator loses First Amendment case over he is he, she is she book display. So essentially, there was a teacher in Oregon, and he had these he is he, she is she, and then this third book from Matt Walsh, Johnny the Walrus. And they basically say, like, no, trans kids aren't a thing. He is he, she is she, and then Johnny's a walrus, not anything else. He's a walrus. Which is so interesting, because we talk a lot about the pro-trans books, or this, like, books that spread this idea to kids that they can identify as any damn thing they please. But this is an opposite situation. The teacher, the school disciplined him, said, you can't do that. He said, yes, I can. It's my First Amendment right. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, actually, you can't. So there were a few different bases for their decision, but this is from MS Now, as legal analyst. It says that two of the judges articulated, they cited a 2007 Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruling, quote, the First Amendment does not entitle primary and secondary teachers when conducting the education of captive audiences to cover topics or advocate viewpoints that depart from the curriculum adopted by the school system. Okay, so essentially saying that, yeah, you've got a captive audience, in this case of kids, and so you're essentially, you know, claiming First Amendment, but forcing them or exposing them to your particular viewpoint. And as a teacher, you are not able to do that. But then I would read that again and say, okay, then why is it still happening so frequently? Because I have no issue with that per se. Like, I have no issue with an Oregon school saying, no, you can't have the he is he, the she is she, the Johnny the Walrus book that says trans kids don't exist, etc. What I'm not fine with is yet you know damn well that Oregon schools, that Washington schools, that California schools are allowing the opposite. We talk about it all the time. The unhinged books that these kids have to read aloud in class, we've done stories on that. We've played videos that have been shown to kids in like fourth grade music classes saying, you can be anything you want. He, she, they, them, zay, zare. You can be a cat. You can be whatever you want. I don't see. So if this is a Ninth Circuit ruling, does that not apply then to all of these teachers in Washington State who we've caught red-handed doing similar things? Why aren't any of them being disciplined? Have you heard any disciplinary stories out of Oregon public schools or California public schools about teachers being disciplined for having their, you know, love is love books and all these things that perpetuate the trans ideology? I haven't. So I think what needs to happen, and we had an example of this on the show just 2 weeks ago or so of a mom whose 10-year-old daughter went to music class and was shown this bizarre Pride Month video that wasn't part of the curriculum. So what that mom should do is sue, because now, based on this Ninth Circuit ruling, the First Amendment does not entitle primary and secondary teachers, when conducting the education of captive audiences, to cover topics or advocate viewpoints that depart from the curriculum adopted by the school system. So this now is, they look, the Ninth Circuit, do I think they would have ruled this way if it had been reversed? Probably not. But now they've ruled this way, and now it's on the books. So now, every single time a parent encounters a situation like this with one of their teachers, they should sue over it, because they'd absolutely win. So unreal. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about this, because again, I'm fine with just saying, look, the curriculum is the curriculum and you can't deviate from it. Don't be weird. If teachers could be trusted, you know, back in the day, I'd be like, fine. But I don't know if that's the case anymore. So I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe that all should all books displayed and or read in public schools be part of a pre-approved curriculum? So like no bringing a book in at random, displaying a book you like or something like that as a teacher, Nicole, yes or no?
Well, I think this case kind of forces that, right? Yes. Because if you're going to say you can sue over it, then it needs to be approved beforehand. Otherwise, so you're actually going against something, in other words, right? So...
And then it comes down to who's approving the curriculum.
Right.
If that's OSPI, they're going to approve all the insane left-wing crazy books, but not the Johnny the Walrus.
Right.
So that also can end up being an unfair outcome.
Wouldn't it have to go through does this meet these criteria?
You would
think. Then it gets pushed out or whatever it is. So.
Well, it's the same way I feel about like the Bible in schools. Like, look, no, you didn't. I don't want the Bible or the Ten Commandments.
But it's
or anything
a historical
like that.
Document.
Okay, come on. Would you want the Quran taught in schools as a historical document?
Well, I don't want it. I don't want either taught. But I'm saying, if it's just there as a, it's so you can be aware of, and that's, I think that's the same argument you can make about any of these books. So. And if you're going to say, no, nothing like this can be in a school, then, yeah, it's going to be hard to fill a library.
Yeah, that's true. 85% of you say yes, it has to be pre-approved curriculum. Heroism said, I said yes, but it's important to distinguish what pre-approved means. Generally speaking, my yes comes from the stance of material that's available for students in school be appropriate for the audience. Yeah, so is it age appropriate? And who's deciding that? Because we got some real pervs working in our public school system. Mm-hmm. Robert, this one's kind of tricky. I eventually chose yes because that could help keep out weirdo trans books, but I think it could bite us on normal books deemed racist, etc., like Huck Finn. Yeah, it all comes down to who's the judge and jury on it, right? Sherry says, I voted yes. The public schools have clearly demonstrated they cannot be trusted to make decisions without parental input and oversight. Tommy says, pre-approved curriculum in public schools assures standardized education regardless of location. Yeah, I just think that at this point, there's been too many nutso things that at least in the classroom, I think a library is different. Because you can go into a library and you can choose a book that you want to check out. You know, as long as somebody's not holding your hand and leading you over there and saying, hey, check out this book that tells you how to cut off your genitals, you know. I mean, there's probably books like that. Do it at home. Do it yourself. So a library, I feel like, is a little bit different. Like, let's let them check out the books within reason that they want to check out. But in the classroom, displaying it... I don't think so. I don't think so. All right. I have to talk about this because we discussed the Dana Bash. Dana Bash.
You know what? I was watching Fox yesterday and they were using both.
It's Dana for sure. So we were playing the clip of her going tit for tat with RFK Jr. There was one clip that we didn't play on the show yesterday. Here it is.
Also trying to find out how it interacts with people's DNA, what's predisposed to have an autistic child. Are you doing both?
Yeah, but Dana, you probably don't understand this because you're not a scientist, but genes
well, you're not
don't
either.
Cause...
So that little exchange. Now, we played like a 2-minute exchange yesterday where she came off as a buffoon. And he was really, I mean, he had a lot of good points where she's talking about, you're causing vaccine hesitancy. And he's like, are you advocating for vaccines? Is that your job? But of course, you know, that was the one moment where I'm like, oh, she did get him there. You know, she's like, she did get him. He's not a scientist either. But in the totality of what they're talking about, you know, the Fauci stuff and how newsworthy the diaries are and his pleading the fifth and all of that, and how Dana Bash was named in the Fauci diaries. So there's so many things the media could grab a hold of that are really newsworthy. Nope, they were like, oh, Dana Bash is so great, because they point to that one line. Here's Parade magazine. Dana Bash's one-line response to RFK Jr. sparks applause across the internet. What? I mean, I'm on blue sky? What corners of the internet are you on? And what I find funny about this is Parade magazine, okay, it's like a, what does it say? The Parade brand has been delighting, enlightening, and inspiring readers since it was founded in 1941. Through our access to A-list celebrities, top experts, blah, 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 our team provides information, solutions. It's like a culture magazine, right? Okay, so why are local news outlets publishing articles from Parade magazine, The Olympian, The News Tribune? Do you think they did stories talking about what's in Fauci's diaries and the fact that Dana Bash was in there, like colluding with Fauci, essentially? No, this is the one they choose to publish. Dana Bash's one-line response to RFK Jr. sparks applause across the internet. Yay from the Olympian. Yay from the News Tribune. Dana, you're so brave and wonderful. It's like, okay, I would like, though, for you to talk about the fact that she's in the Fauci diaries and so is Jake Tapper. And Fauci was having dinner with Jake Tapper. And then they never mention any of that on air. I would love for you to talk about all the lies that Fauci told publicly that ruined people's lives and their livelihoods while he was saying different things in his diary. I mean, don't you think fundamentally that's the more journalistic thing, not republishing a Parade magazine article that says, oh, yeah, Dana Bash, she got him with her one-liner. I mean, this is the state of the media. In Parade magazine, fine. If that had just been in Parade magazine, we wouldn't have talked about it. Because that whole, you know, genre of media, that's all they do. But the fact it's being republished in print and newspapers across America just is insane. It's absolutely insane. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream. Is Miranda in the live stream today? Oh, hello, Miranda. Yeah. Miranda's kind of on a quasi-vacation. She went back home to see our family. I didn't tell you where she went because this weekend she was surprising her friend for her 40th birthday. And I was like, just in case her friend is watching, I don't want to ruin the surprise. But apparently they had a very good time. So, all right, on the man arrested for arson in the Spokane fires, Greg says $1 million bond. How about $1 billion bond? This should never have happened. He should have been locked up for life. Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of why they, you know, charged him with manslaughter and not murder, but yeah, he was pretty young when it happened. So if I do the math, so he's 37 now, 27, so that was 2010, 16 years, it's 21. So he was like 21 when he killed his dad. Yeah, that is odd, isn't it? But $1 million bond, I think that they always base it based off of like risk to the public, obviously, likelihood to flee, but then ability to pay. So if you've got someone who's got nothing, they don't have a pot to piss in, $1 million will do the trick. You know what I mean? Right. So,
and all right. His dad's not around to bail him out.
Jesus, Nicole.
Well.
It's cold. Yeah.
He should probably still be in jail.
Yeah.
100%. From Avery Schrode, how sick do you have to be to do something like this?
And I know.
It's pretty sick. I mean.
It's horrible. Entire
you're not right in the mind. And I don't understand why that's an excuse to let you out of jail. That's an excuse to keep you in some sort of confinement to keep you out from being a danger to the public.
Entire neighborhoods just gone.
So sad.
Because one deranged lunatic decided to light some grass on fire.
Wild.
Leland, I worked for 40 hours straight on the fires in Okanagan County and got home after midnight last night dead tired. The first thing I did before showering in bed was to make sure we filled out our ballots. That's awesome. I love that story. Yeah. I'm going to post that because that... Can I post your comment? Okay, cool. Love that. No excuses, people. And look, it's the people who you're choosing on that ballot who, you know, can really decide whether we have a calm wildfire season, a bad wildfire season, whether we put people in jail who do things that are wrong, whether police are well-funded enough to look into arson reports like the one in 2025 or the two in 2025. So yeah, this stuff is directly tied to what's happening. All right, on the Puyallup School District responding to failure to report charges, we did really quickly, I want to note, get an email back from the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office during the show today because we asked, why aren't you charging him with lying? Because the principal lied to the school resource officer saying, the mom told me about something but didn't say it was a sexual assault, which is obviously not true. So they told us the underlying issue in this case is the obligation to make a mandatory report. So the mandatory reporting law is the most directly applicable RCW. Any false or incomplete statements made could be evidence that a jury considers in the mandatory reporting case. So that's
In other words, possibly he was lying to cover up his failure to report.
To report. So. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, yes, yes. That's probably what he was doing.
Right.
Yeah. All right. You want to do that last?
Aaron, teachers and administrators know they have to report. We have training at the beginning of every school year.
Yep.
And I know that as well. I know plenty of people who take that training and they're just trying to get around it.
100%. It's so obvious. There's no excuse. And that's why the charges. And it's why I was so aggressive on the air is like, I get it why they didn't charge the trans teen with sexual assault because there is an element. It's a sport that involves touching. I thought it would be very difficult to prove. You might disagree with me, but I just, from a case perspective, but I said, but they'll have no excuse on the other thing.
No.
Because it's black and white. They didn't report. And so now that you have this, I think you're going to have teachers who, even if they don't want to do the right thing, are like, well, I'm also don't want to be dragged out of here in handcuffs. So what's happened in Longview and Puyallup, I think, is significant to stop this from happening again as teachers try to save their ass. On the Democrats saying police funding was shoved down their throats. Mac Mann says, a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. A little bit.
100%.
The spicy went to the brain.
Oh, this next one's
Ash
not any better.
Says, she's a rabid pathological liar, completely incompetent, incoherent on all matters. I didn't say
it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. On the judge weighing in on the rent control lawsuit, Chris says, I was a landlord for 14 years. The laws the state kept passing created a situation where the renters had more rights than the owner of the property. It blew my mind. I sold my property. Yeah. And that is what's happening. So,
Crafty Graham Crispy says, "Does
ask me a question? I don't know the answer
RHA
to."
They have a commercial division, and I don't
believe so. No. I think they represent small to mid-sized landlords. Yes. But I'll get you an answer on that.
Yeah, we'll look into that.
All right, on the Ninth Circuit ruling against the educators' free speech. Allegedly, Matthew Cook. So the teacher is being punished for having a biology book in the classroom. That's funny. Yeah, a book about biology.
True.
That's a good one. I like
that. That is a good one. I hope they use that in court. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Todd says, I agree with the Ninth Circuit. No teacher should be allowed to teach outside of the curriculum in the school. Especially if their employer says so.
Yeah.
You don't have free speech on the job.
Yeah, I mean, you do have free speech on the job if you work for the government, because that is sort of the whole idea of the First Amendment. But in those situations, I agree that you have a captive audience. So as a teacher, for instance, if you're saying that, you know, they've got free speech that's endless, they could just sit and rant and rave to students about their wild political ideals. They'll be like, free speech. So there is some sort of reasonable line there. We'll end with Thomas. Stick to teaching curriculum and nothing else. Just let parents teach the rest. Yeah, and if parents want to cuckoo and have their kid read a book about cutting off their genitals, what am I going to do about it? You know, I don't know. I don't know if I could do anything about that. All right. I'll get to our closing sanity check. Okay. Another win for Team Sanity. So you'll recall that the Women's Tennis Association announced last month that it would be requiring a gender test just for everyone. Everybody's going to have to do a gender test. One time, just so we know for sure, are you a dude or not? And it was the first women's professional sports organization that came out and said, we just need to do this. So now, tennis star Arina Sabalenka was asked about this, and she's one of the greats in women's tennis right now, and thank God she has common sense.
The WTA recently announced that, you know, the players will take a one-time gender test. How do you feel about that, the first pro league to go in that direction?
I think it's really important to keep the fairness in our tour, and it's obvious that biologically, right, the men are way stronger than women, so I feel like it would be not really fair for the woman to compete against biological men. So I believe it took them a little while to make the decision, and I support it. But for me, I'm focusing on myself, on my goals, you know, whatever it takes. If they want to test us all, I'm happy to do that. It's pretty fair, and let's keep it that way.
I love it. I feel like there's so much momentum on this issue, and you've got the stars of one of the stars of the WNBA, star of women's tennis. I mean, on top of that, Serena Williams has already said as much. You know, I can't beat men. I don't want to compete against men. So let's just keep the momentum going. Bravery breeds bravery. That's what we're seeing right now, and we absolutely need to keep the pressure up. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Again, our hearts go out to everyone in Spokane that is dealing with the devastating fires out there. One of them, as we know, caused by an arsonist, a convicted felon. There's going to be more information, I think, based on what I'm being told coming out about this guy in the next 24 hours. So we're going to wait until we can verify it definitively. And we'll have more on the show tomorrow. So if you'd like to sign up to support our show, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. It's $5 a month to support our independent work. I think it's a pretty good deal. We're trying to take down the Seattle Times, King 5 News, Cairo 7, Olive Como in Fox 13 alone. They're not the worst of the worst offenders.
The Tribune and Olympian who do those Tribune, nonsense stories.
The Tribune, the Olympian, virtually every newspaper in the state. We got to take them down by growing so big we can't be ignored. See you tomorrow.